Welcome back, riders, to another outstanding edition of the Ride or Dynasty podcast. This time, it's a very special mid-season award episode where we talk about all the things that should have been, have been, and the surprises and disappointments that have made the fantasy season what it is this year. With us is Robbie. How you doing, Robbie?
Doing fantastic, man. Survived my Survivor League just by... Man, what was it? A couple yards that field goal was short. Pittsburgh almost lost it for me.
So very close from 65 in Heinz Field. That went off the foot, it looked like it had a real shot.
Looked like it was closer than it actually was. When I heard that thing hit in real time, I was
sounded like a cannon.
Please don't bounce in. And then you looked at the other angle replay and it's like 15 yards short. At the bottom of the post.
Man, it in Pittsburgh, 65 yards might as well be 3 miles, but it would just be the most Steeler thing ever to have that thing like doink in and just blow a game against
Matt
a team
Nagy could
that
never
they should have had
that way.
That's true. So many streaks could have been broken there.
The karma is against him.
Yeah, Kit, how you doing this week?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Glad to be on.
Tell you what, surviving the time change and then the extra late Monday night game, still dragging of the buttocks today.
Yeah, a little bit. The time change was weird. I've always enjoyed it, but now having a kid, it just meant like an extra hour of morning time with the kid where it was just like, fuck, and I go, the nap time yet?
In this instance, man, having kids and pets is the same thing because they don't give a crap that we move the clock.
Right, exactly.
It's still now 4:30 to them, and it's time to be up, and we have to go either outside or be changed. Oof. Well, let's dive in. It's been an interesting week, to say the least, and all kinds of shenanigans keep coming up. What's been a miserable year for Dalvin Cook has gotten even more regrettable with news leaking that he might have been involved in a bad thing. Dalvin Cook allegedly abused a former girlfriend, causing a concussion during an altercation at his home last year. Now, there's all kinds of conflicting information about this diving around, and I suspect that it's going to get way more interesting before it's all over. But does this do anything to explain the lack of effectiveness from Dalvin Cook this year? Because I know a lot of people took him as high as 5 or 6 overall and have definitely not gotten the investment. Kit, what are you thinking about this whole deal?
So I don't think it explains his lack of effectiveness at all. Necessarily would affect his play. I do think that regardless of what the facts reveal, I should withhold judgment, but I usually think if an NFL athlete and a woman get in an altercation and she ends up getting the worst of the injuries, even if she was initially in the wrong, he probably took it too far and didn't behave correctly. So who knows? I think from a soulless and pragmatic perspective, probably doesn't matter too much. I mean, I'm not rushing out to acquire Dalvin Cook in Dynasty, but it seems likely that given this is civil litigation, like stuff won't get resolved until the 2023 season, which is when he might get discipline. And if you're thinking Dalvin Cook is your workhorse in 2023, you're probably doing Dynasty wrong anyway. So probably still good for the next 2 years.
Robbie, as a proud supporter of the Wide Right crew, is there any history or track record? I know, I see the look. For Cook being on the wrong side of things, or is this just like kind of a one-off in his backstory?
I'm not aware of any other incidents that went on. I know Florida State had to clean up the program quite a bit a few years ago, and I don't recall him being involved in any incidents at that time. I feel like Jameis was drawing a lot of the headlines, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but, he's filed charges against her. I don't think the league's going to do anything at all this year. So unfortunately, I won't be able to sell my Alexander Mattison shares in Dynasty. And some of us took him at number 2 overall in a redraft, and I'm feeling the pain.
And, at the time, it looked like a sound investment. He'd been super consistent. And to this point, this is like the first news we're hearing of any kind of real shenanigans going on off the field at Minnesota.
He's putting the yards up. I think he's due for some positive touchdown regression.
Oh yeah. His
fantasy performance has anything to do with this. And I think we'll see a strong second half of the season from him.
Yeah, I think it's entirely due to offensive line changes, and the beneficiaries have definitely been the wide receivers there, because those short yardage patterns have definitely been paying off, and we've seen upticks in touchdowns for Thielen on those kind of short and kind of direct goal line type routes compared to years past where that was cook, cook, and then cook again if needed. So I think we're starting to see some of that branch out to benefit some other players, but one would presume that as the season goes on and defensive lines across the league wear down a little bit and the injuries begin to take toll on team depth, that we would probably see some touchdown regression in the positive sense for Cook. But I mean, who knows? If you can get him from somebody who's exasperated, then might not be the worst idea I ever heard. Speaking of crazy shenanigans here, the OBJ saga continues and has seemed to at least run its way out of Cleveland. A bad thing finally leaves Cleveland. How about that? OBJ forced his way out and is quoted as saying on the way out the door when he hit waivers that I am prepared to be a problem for anyone who claims me, citing his desire to join a contender. And three notable places have surfaced. The Chiefs, the Pack, and the Saints have all kind of popped up as teams both needing a wide receiver and being pretty suitable fits, really. The only exception may be the Saints, depending on the extent of whatever they're going to do with their quarterback situation. So of the three, Robbie, what do you think? Where's the best landing spot there?
The best landing spot for him has to be the Saints. I mean, they're desperate for receiving help. For fantasy purposes, I think it's got to be Packers, though. It's got the most accurate quarterback of the three there. And, you know, he'll be weapon number two behind Devontae Adams. Green Bay's got some injuries stacking up. We're short a couple tight ends. The receiving core has been banged up throughout the year. Whereas if he goes to Kansas City, yes, Patrick Mahomes is awesome. But, I mean, he's going to be behind Tyreek Hill. He's going to be behind Kelsey. He's going to be third on that pecking order. He's not going to get the targets that you want for fantasy.
Kit, same question.
Yeah, I can't disagree. The Saints are the best fantasy landing spot. I want to say I largely think it doesn't matter. Like, it's going to take him some time to get warmed up. Maybe he has some high volume games on the Saints, but like, that's always what I expected on the Browns too. Even though they were a running team, you know, he was supposed to be the one clearing away when they traded for him, and he never was that. And so I don't know. I just question whether it's even relevant news or it's just a name that's fading, and you know, in 2 years, he'll be Josh Gordon or something.
See, I think he's probably all of those things, but I think the place that makes the best sense for him is to land in Kansas City, because that offense desperately misses Sammy Watkins as a legit wide receiver too, or at least a dude who can run an actual route and catch a real football instead of just run far and attempt to run fast. The addition of a guy who's actually a capable NFL wide receiver as the wide receiver two, really even de facto wide receiver three there, puts that entire offense back on schedule and might be the very thing to break both Hill and Pat out of their kind of midseason malaise here. The accuracy may not improve for Mahomes because those two tackles they have there stink, but at least it puts the route tree back on schedule and essentially ensures that you can't just completely bracket Hill the entire game. So for me, the place that makes the most football sense and probably the best sense for him if he's trying to rehab his image is Kansas City. And Andy Reid has a history of dealing with disgruntled wide receivers and getting the best out of them. So I think that's probably where he ought to try to go. I say all that now, it means he's probably going to be a Saint.
Breaking news. No.
Yeah, who knows? What do I know about these things? Speaking of what do I know about these things and kind of injury up front, Sam Darnold, again, continues to have no manner of luck. He starts off the season looking actually pretty decent in Carolina and then kind of goes into a bit of a funk along with the rest of the receivers. And as CMC went out and kind of got that whole offense off schedule, regressed to the Darnold we knew so well with the Jets. Now the poor guy has a broken bone in his back. It's actually a shoulder blade in his throwing arm and will be out several weeks at least. Now, him being out is one thing, but the question is who comes back in to replace him? Early news is that PJ Walker is going to get the start this week on a we'll see how it goes basis. And old friend Matt Barkley has been signed off the Titans practice squad. Do either of those names excite you even a little, Kit?
No, I don't think, because Walker doesn't run too much. Like, sometimes you can get fluky guys who run enough to be spot starters, like Heinicke or whatever. Plus, he might be bad enough throwing the couple things I've seen that, you know, he's not worth it. I know Barkley is nothing. It's the end for the Panthers. But I would claim we're after waivers now, but I would claim Walker in Superflex Dynasty Leagues if he's available, right? I mean, Superflex, you can never have too many starting quarterbacks. There's going to be guys going down and missing buys and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't even know if I would claim Barkley. He's pretty much proved himself not to be good. Many NFL teams have moved on from him. And even if Sam Darnold came back, it wouldn't help this team. So they're screwed.
Does the return to CMC added with some of the mobility we see with Walker kind of do anything for you, Rob? Or is that the end here for the Carolina Panthers?
I've got a little bit of faith in basically the MVP of the XFL league over here. PJ Walker's got ties to the offense. He's familiar. He looked awesome when I watched him live a few times, the Houston Roughnecks. Obviously a big step up in the NFL, and he has not looked the part of an NFL quarterback yet. But, you know, with McCaffrey coming back, that's going to open the offense up quite a bit. It's going to make his progressions and reads a lot easier. But, you know, I'm not really putting a claim in on either of them if they were free agents in the league, unless I'm in a super flex best ball. Like, I'd love to have him on my bench on a best ball league just in case he blows up for a game or plays a bad defense. But, man, that's not who I want in my super flex spot. You're not making the playoffs if you're starting him for more than 1 or 2 weeks.
True story. For me, it's all about prevent defense here. I'm going to put in the waiver claim, but the whole deal is just to make sure somebody else doesn't get him and he can go hang out on the bench over yonder and collect his paycheck and have a nice time. But it's all about prevent defense on this one. And if you haven't used your waiver order and you're high, if you have a sequential waiver, or if you still have some fab money that you don't know what to do with, this might be the time to prevent somebody, because even if somebody's looking for him as a 1 week starter, that's a 1 week denial that you've put on them. Even if it's just a bye week plug or something for them, you still put them behind the eight ball for another week. And that could be what squeaks you into the playoffs. So tactics do matter. And I would suggest that you look at that. Speaking of tactics that didn't work, Aaron Rodgers sort of kind of lied to everybody and then came out as a huge jerk, big surprise, about the whole COVID thing. He now is wallet light to the tune of 14,000 plus, as is Alan Lazard, for both being unvaccinated and going to a party and then not reporting it. And then the pack are down 300K for everything that they knew and all this. Now, all of that was collectively bargained and all those individual dollar values were substantial, but meant to be for the first offense. The second offense could be anything as far as the Packers are concerned, as far as losing draft picks or possibly losing draft position so they could be docked around, or they could just flat lose the pick. So it all depends what's going to happen. And now the fact they're both unvaccinated and everybody knows they best meet their compliance. It was said that Rodgers told everybody knew. And that has definitely leaked to be not true throughout many different independent media, non-media, and people just kind of going to social media from the team. Does this kind of cause a rift in the locker room, Rob?
If anything, I mean, I think Rodgers got the discount double check on that fine. It should have been a heck of a lot higher for what happened. At the end of the day, he's the quarterback. It's not going to cause a rift in the locker room. That team is squarely focused on winning and winning now, and they know Rodgers is the best person to do it. If this was a waiver, you know, some guy on the practice squad, you know, if OBJ pulled this in Cleveland, absolutely locker room cancer, but not Aaron Rodgers. He's beyond that, and unfortunately beyond getting a vaccine as well.
Yeah, anybody but the quarterback would be K thanks bye on this deal. But Rodgers did come out with an interesting explanation after time, citing that he is incapable of getting the Moderna or the Pfizer due to an allergen with the delivery mechanism, and that when he was scheduled to go for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it was temporarily removed from the market and has since been restated, and that was weeks upon weeks ago, and simply just has not kind of taking the time to go get it. I get that as people get busy, you get into the swing of things. I get that like little things slip your mind, although that's not little and translates into a significant lie going forward. And if any of the players on that team have family members that are immunocompromised, I would be hella pissed at him. What it did do was get us a showcase of what life after Rodgers is going to look at. And Kit, give us a little summary of that.
Not good, Pat. No, didn't look confidence inspiring. Love settled down a little bit in the second half, but you know, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other. Is like him not getting experience against NFL players part of why he's not, doesn't look much more developed. I mean, again, it's one game, so I'm not condemning him yet for sure. Or is it that like, hey, even after 18 months behind Rodgers, he can't figure it out, you know? So like, I don't know, but it didn't look good. He didn't look largely like he knew what he was doing. I mean, it looked akin to sort of Trey Lance's one start, which was not fun. I'd be worried. Rodgers, I gotta imagine, is gone. I don't know. Maybe because they held water for him on this vaccine stuff, he'll stay. But I don't know. I think it's looking bleak.
Did you see anything in Love's performance that led you to believe that there's something there? Is there more meat on the bone, or is he just kind of like looking like more and more of a career backup sort of dude, Rob?
He looked like a deer in the headlights to me. I want him to succeed. I want him to succeed so bad. But, man, not working through progressions well. A lot of not setting the feet before he throws. Just sloppy mechanics. And, you know, you can tweak mechanics at the NFL level, but you shouldn't be having to rebuild someone from the ground up. I saw at least 10 throws where his front foot wasn't even planted. He was just, like, stepping backwards and launching. And no wonder it was nowhere near his intended target, because Aaron Rodgers wouldn't hit that.
Interesting thing was Kansas City finally got themselves a legit pass rush going, which was interesting. Love definitely didn't have all that much time to sit and did have to move off the spot. So protection was a bit of an issue, but the mechanics were ghastly. He looked like a dude making his first start. He just did. And we saw the same thing from Lance. The thing that was really odd about it, though, is that when guys make their first start, they tend to, especially when they have an all-star like Devonta, they tend to lock on and then force the ball. And we didn't see like the crazy target pile that should have been there for Devonta and just wasn't. And that's even more unsettling, because it says to me that he was attempting to go through his progressions, or that they were scripting plays that didn't involve Devonta, which I can't imagine, or he just couldn't get through his progressions. And both of those things are a touch unsettling, but no, you can't be out on him, especially because he's already on your roster. So I would just kind of stash him, because we know life after Rodgers is sooner rather than later. And I might even think that this might even hasten the departure here, as opposed to working about salvaging it next year. Be interesting to see what happens in Green Bay. If it's true, though, that the coaching staff was kind of calling plays for the other guys as opposed to Devonta, man, I don't know what they're doing. That would be a bad look for Matt LaFleur. Take a second here and think about what we saw from Fields in the Pittsburgh game, and then compare that to what you saw from Love for Green Bay. Was there any real commonalities there? Kit, why don't we start with you?
So, I mean, I would say there's more commonalities for every other Justin Fields game until the Pittsburgh game, because I didn't even see the flashes from Love the way we kind of finally saw from Fields, I think, in the Pittsburgh game. I mean, there were a couple throws. The one, the touchdown, was called back. I mean, that's a ridiculous physical talent on display there, right? And if he can speed up his decision-making and, you know, not hold it too long, and even if his decision is just to take off for 6 yards and get out of bounds as a start, you know, I think he can get there. So I don't really see commonalities, but I do have to say that, you know, as a Justin Fields evaluator, I, you know, need to see more of it. But I went from, if this continues all season, he's hopeless, to, oh, maybe he's, you know, going to kind of start to figure out the NFL, maybe.
Robbie, what do you think?
Man, I had to pull the box score up on this one, because I quickly erased it from memory. And good God, Jordan Love actually hyper targeted Devontae Adams, 14 targets on 34.
What did he finish with?
Did he really? Because watching that game, it didn't feel that way.
It didn't when I watched it either. Yeah. I felt like there's a lot of stuff going to Cobb and AJ Dillon.
I feel like a lot of those targets were credited to balls that were 70 feet over his head and thrown into the sidelines.
But to go back to your actual question, I saw a lot of similarities between Justin Fields' first couple games and Jordan Love's. He looked like a guy who wasn't ready for the NFL, wasn't comfortable with playmakers, wasn't used to practicing with them. I think getting some more first-team reps with Devontae and company will certainly help the timing. Learning how to throw with both feet set will also help the accuracy issues.
It is easier to throw a football with 2 feet on the ground.
I don't know how many practice reps that's going to take.
Like 8,000.
It's not promising, but Justin Fields has seemed to turn a corner, 4 or 5 starts in. Some of it, I tend to think has to do with Matt Nagy not calling plays anymore, less so than Justin Fields being a bad quarterback. I don't think we can use that as Jordan Love's excuse yet.
We'll give Love a little bit of an olive branch in that Devonta didn't practice until Friday and even was a little limited in that Friday practice. So that definitely cuts down the reps, especially him getting first team reps. So there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to build a tremendous amount of consistency. As we know, the starters take those reps in normal seasons and normal games anyway. So it is, I guess it makes some sense. But wow, it is unfortunate. Now, I can say for Fields, boy, he threw some absolute dimes there. The 50-yarder to Robinson looked awesome. The one deep one to Mooney was ridiculous. Just what a throw. And his athleticism was definitely on full display. I think the decision-making is coming, and it's just a lack of kind of offensive line talent right there now in Chicago, where there's so many retreads on that offensive line for guys who just went out of the season very early or, in fact, were failures to launch because of injury. So,
yeah, if he can just average that. Yeah.
All right, Robbie, go ahead.
I was shocked, how Allen Robinson's looked like hot trash all season. He's still, he had a better game. It wasn't what you'd expect from your wide receiver one, but I was shocked that Fields was able to feed him, Darnell Mooney, and Cole Kmet, and really at least get usable, serviceable games fantasy-wise at all three of them. And hopefully that continues in the future as his passing volume increases and we can start to have someone useful besides the Chicago running back.
Kit?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it was a fairly mediocre game still for a quarterback, but if he can even just do that or average that the rest of the year, given the surrounding cast and the coaching staff, I'll be very positive about his future outlook. This is doing good in the circumstances he's in.
Yeah, Pittsburgh fan on full display here. Steelers secondary isn't good. They just aren't. Minka's not been the Minka we had last year for sure, for reasons unknown. Flies around the field. I don't know if he's trying to do too much or what the deal is, but the picks haven't been there and just the ball hawking coverage hasn't been there. The corners are either showing inexperience or age or both for a variety of different reasons. And what you're seeing is a tremendous amount of zone. And thank goodness for TJ Watt and Cam Hayward. Hayward finally rewarded on the INT by the big man. It was great. I can say, though, this is the first real game action I got to watch for Fields. I was very impressed. He had command. He understood what was going on. He had control of his huddle. And all those things are really encouraging for a young player. And they were definitely things that I was a little apprehensive about with him coming out of Ohio State. And the accuracy that he was able to put on some of those deep balls was very impressive. And that is definitely something that did carry over from what we saw at Ohio State. So good on him. And, that's good for Chicago because they've been waiting a long time to have something to hang their hat on. So good all around. All right, fellas, let's get into our Rod Pod Awards show. Here we go here. The NFC edition of the Midseason Awards for the Rod Pod time. Now, we're going to go through the NFC this week. Next week, we'll do the AFC, just writes itself, super easy. And what we're going to do is first go through division by division, and we're going to pick a fantasy MVP for each team. I'll be giving individuals their team. I want you guys to just have a look, think about a half a second, and just give us like a 30-second, who is the fantasy MVP for their squad? Now, we'll start with the NFC least, and they have lived up to that moniker this year, both disappointing and breaking hearts fantasy-wide. We'll start with the Washington football team. Kit, who is the fantasy MVP for the WFT?
God, given I'm super flex oriented, I would say Heinicke. I don't think he's a good NFL quarterback, but he manages to sneakily run a little bit. You probably got him for free off waivers or flip the fourth round pick for him or something like that in the offseason. So, you know, in terms of above expected value, at least, I would go with Heinicke.
Acquired for fab money and considering the rash of injuries, the only viable choice there for the WFT. The only other option might be Scary Terry. Mm. Robbie, we'll give you the Philadelphia Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
I think it's got to be Jalen Hurts. Say what you will about his NFL production, but he's electric for fantasy. He was a top 10 quarterback every week until the last 2 weeks, where he finished 12 and 25. 25, a little disappointing, but 25 in an absolute blowout win. So mark him down. He's a quarterback one going forward until they pull the plug. Seen some improvements in his real life skills, and I'm a little more hesitant to think he's got a future in 2022 as a starting NFL quarterback as I was, you know, coming in. But, you know, I planted my flag. I thought he'd be a top five quarterback, and he certainly will be as long as he starts.
The rare case of a guy being a not so great real NFL quarterback, but a really good fantasy quarterback because of the rushing yards. And this is a real life illustration of what rushing yards and rushing TDs will do for a quarterback. The only other viable player here that could even get mentioned is Devonta Smith. And as a rookie and just starting to flash, everything he does is completely tied to what you get out of that young quarterback. Kit, the New York Football Giants.
It is very ugly. I guess I'll say there's three bad options. I guess I'll say Daniel Jones just because I know last week became bad. And I know his long-term prospects aren't great, but I think he's still something like QB 16 or 15 on the season, which, you know, in Superflex is viable, and he won you a couple weeks early and only lost you probably last week. So
he's no Jalen Hurts.
Best of a bad, no Jalen Hurts, but best of a bad bunch.
Best of a bad bunch. And if he is your bye week quarterback, that's probably not the worst deal you could get. Robbie, how about them Cowboys?
I think, you know, the answer is pretty straightforward here. Dax had a relatively down year for his standards. Zeke's been okay. He's met expectations, but man, MVP, the guy you picked up off your waiver wire and even dynasty leagues is Dalton Schultz, who is sitting at tight end three or four, depending on what your format was, until about 2 weeks ago. It didn't help this week that Dallas basically put up a goose and was just awful. And no Dak Prescott the week before. But, I mean, until those 2 weeks, your top four tight end that you got for free in a dynasty league, absolutely sign me up for that. He's got to be the MVP.
It's unbelievable. Coming into the season, if you had told me that he would be our midseason MVP for Dallas, I would have told you were either insane or you'd have lifted a large sum of money from me if we were betting, because that is nowhere near. He wouldn't have been in my top three, maybe not even my top five. All right, the least is behind us. Off to the north, the NFC North, the historic division, Chicago Bears. Kit.
Oh, geez, that's impossible. I don't know. I'll say Montgomery because he's been very good in every game he's played. He's looked good enough sort of just from the eye test that I think he's acquitted himself of the questions that were like, was last year a one-year wonder? I mean, again, he's going to be in his third year now, so, you know, at some point soon, he'll be a depreciating asset. But, like, if I could acquire him down the stretch and know I had a couple more years of starting Monty, I got my RB2 for a minute, and I'd be all over that.
I'm a big Monty guy. And you're right. In the games that he's played, he's been very effective. And for a while there, he was the only fantasy-relevant asset they had. Speaking of a team with a lack of fantasy-relevant assets, Robbie, the Lions.
It's tempted to go with Hockenson here, but he's cooled off after a hot start. I think the answer is DeAndre Swift, even with the injuries and everything else he's dealt with this year. The offense absolutely goes through him. A guy basically is a double-digit target machine, plus, you know, 10 to 12 carries on the ground every week. He's sitting right at RB8 or 9 right now, having played one fewer game than a few of the guys in front of him. Not to mention, you know, snap limitations due to the injuries. I think he will continue to rise up the rankings. You'll have a top six, top five running back on your team at the end of the season in PPR formats. And for where you drafted him, that is a smash win for your team.
Definitely. I mean, no player is more important to Swift than Jamal Williams to take those hard carries in the interior work, because Swift does not run the ball well at all in between the tackles. And the less they can do to give him the ball there, the better off everyone is going to be, including him. But boy, get him any kind of space and he is absolutely electric. Kit, you get the Vikings.
All right, so I'm going to say Kirk Cousins. I know this is fantasy relevant mostly, but I still think that has to be the answer. I know Thielen has scored some touchdowns. Justin Jefferson has been his solid self outside of like one game, solid to great self. But I think Cousins, I think, is QB12 on the season. So he's, you know, maybe not overperforming, but back where he usually is, right? Low QB1. He's just always underrated, I guess, which is why I thought like he was acquirable and I did acquire him in a couple leagues. And also he is the reason why JJF and Thielen are able to be, you know, wide receiver 1-2 fringe or better, on a seasonal basis, at least. He's the catalyst there because Dalvin Cook's not crushing.
He's been everything they've asked of him and then some this year. Rob, the Packers.
I was tempted to go with Aaron Jones just to show a little faith. I think he will have a great second half of the season. AJ Dillon's a little more involved than you would like as an owner of Aaron Jones, but I think it's got to be Devontae Adams. The dude's sitting at wide receiver 5 on the season with everything that's going on around him right now, with getting COVID. Did he catch COVID? Or I know he had a quarantine. I can't remember. But
he missed the game either way, right?
Practice. I think it was just quarantine, but yeah, it doesn't matter. He missed it. You're right, kid. He missed the game.
Yeah. And then absolutely having the atrocious play of Jordan Love last week, and you're still a top 5 wide receiver in fantasy. I mean, sign me up. You're the MVP.
Very good. On to the NFC South, a division of all kinds of just backwards, bimodal weirdness. Kit, start us off with them Saints.
Alvin Kamara. I mean, they've been winning games. You could maybe argue the defense, but I would say Alvin Kamara, talking about fantasy, of course. Like, their passing game has been alternatively atrocious and explosive, but no one has consistently sort of chunked in. Kamara's done fine there. And they're leaning on him a lot more in the run game, right? I mean, than he's ever been leaned on. I think he's going to probably exceed 1,000 yards rushing for the first time, I think he's on pace for 80 more carries than he's ever had or something like that. And, you know, they're winning, and he's why. So I almost feel like it's the answer to both who's their MVP and their fantasy MVP. You know, you could have expected catastrophe as a dynasty Kamara owner coming into this season. And I don't think that's happened, even though his ceiling has lowered and his value is probably lowered. It hasn't been as bad as it could be because they've leaned on him because he's great.
Coming into the season, there was a whole lot of Chicken Little surrounding him, the sky falling, and it just has not fallen. He's been consistent and productive. Maybe not the superstar we were hoping for, but a good start. And in a year where running backs have been so weird, for a top guy like him to produce, super important and super beneficial for the teams that are able to acquire him. Rob, we'll give you a good squad, the Bucks.
I'm tempted to go with Tom Brady here just because
I don't know how you can
for him. That's what I was going to say.
This is like my victory lap. What are you going to say instead? Yeah, I mean, he is the guy you want to own in fantasy football. He's crushing it, especially compared to his draft position in redraft leagues, or, you know, how cheap you could have acquired him in a dynasty as opposed to the guys he's outproducing right now. A shout out to Antonio Brown. If he ever gets out of that walking boot, he's had a I mean, shoot, the whole offense, Gronkowski, everyone, Fournette, all of these pieces that you didn't think were going to be huge have absolutely made monster contributions to that team. But it all goes through Brady, and Brady's smashing it right now.
He's the definition of field general. And if I'm not mistaken, he is the number one fantasy performer in all formats this year. And it's just ridiculous, because it's not like guys haven't missed time, because that offense has been beat up, but he just keeps right on kicking.
I looked 2 weeks ago and he was number one. Hurts was number two. And I imagine not a lot's changed with Tom Brady.
Kit, how about the Falcons?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be tempted to say that, like, from a fantasy perspective, Dynasty, Kyle Pitts has raised his ceiling to, I think, the surefire tight end one in Dynasty, especially given some of the other tight ends, not struggles, but not excelling. But no, I think you got to go Cordarrelle Patterson. I mean, right, another guy you're talking about who players got off waivers, for sure. Teams got off waivers, excuse me, for sure. And now he's just absolutely crushing. He is doing it in different ways. When he gets 9 carries for 10 yards, oh, he has 5 for 84 through the air. When he has 3 catches for 32 through the air, he also happens to do 54 in a score. And at this point, it's not a particularly talented team. They have a bad defense. So regardless of the game script, he's going to get touches. He's every week start now, and you got him for probably nothing.
And he's the absolute anomaly that has both the wide receiver and the running back credit, which is unbelievably useful.
Yep. God, he's like the guy I've dreamed about, like, in fantasy since I was started playing fantasy.
And the crazy thing about it is it's all sustainable, because none of it's like an aberration. You're not betting on weird things to happen on the weekly. It's all a little of this, a little of that. And it's unbelievable that at this point in the fellow's career that it's all come together in Atlanta, of all places.
Who was the Jaguars running back from Penn State? Shoelace Robinson? Like, I was so in on him. I was like, oh my God, he's going to do 700 and 700. And, like, he obviously never did. But
let's finish the South. Rob, you got the Panthers.
Sorry, Rob.
Yeah, sorry. sorry for Panthers fans. You'll feel bad for me. I only have to talk about him for 30 seconds here. I think the answer is, you know, DJ Moore. Christian McCaffrey's been banged up all year. Everyone else on offense has been inconsistent. Sam Darnold started hot and has looked like absolute trash, and now has a fracture in his shoulder. It's got to be DJ Moore. Through all the inconsistencies and injuries, he's still a top 12 wide receiver, and he's someone you can rely on. He's someone who is close to quarterback proof. He's got a bit deeper of a cast than someone like Terry McLaurin, but very similar roles. He just knows how to get open and how to demand targets.
I tell you, talk about a team breaking a fan base's heart, and a coach in Matt Rhule going from instant genius to this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah. It's amazing what winning and losing will do for a guy. All right, let's take the NFC out west. And fellas, not for nothing, but let's just not revisit our predictions for the beginning of the year, because they did not age well.
Ooh.
Let's start with the Seahawks, Kit.
Oh, gosh.
It's another tough one.
Yeah, I guess I'd say Metcalf, right? Because, like, Lockett's been very boom-bust, and, like, if Metcalf is getting 50-yard catches or scoring touchdowns, he's helping that offense as much as possible. Even with Geno Smith, he's the type of receiver who works better with Geno Smith, because you don't have to be accurate and hitting one in stride for him to sort of make the adjustment on the deep passes or the fades. So, in a fairly disappointing season that's been, you know, obviously hurt by Russ's injury, I think he's been something consistent that's helped them win a couple games if they have one.
Rob, take the Niners.
Whoops, sorry there. It's got to be Debo. Everyone was beating the drum on Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle. The offense runs through those two. And no, in fact, Kyle Shanahan chooses to run the offense through whoever he damn well pleases. And this year it's Debo Samuel. For as long as he stays healthy, he was a guy who in a rebuild, I thought about sending a second round draft pick out for him in the preseason, and I was like, nope, that's an overpay. This guy's injury prone. He's the third weapon on a run first team, and now I'm kicking myself in the butt and wishing I made that deal.
I was right there with you. I was not a believer.
I tell you, whenever you hear wide receiver and foot injury, it's always extra scary. And he has just come through and been basically quarterback proof. Because even in the game Lance started, he was just as effective as he had been. He's scoring touchdowns. He's getting some chunk yardage in the run game. He's been very productive. He was really good at the start, and now he's just been pretty good going on. But consistency is important, and he has been exactly that.
He's averaging He's averaging more points per game than everyone in the league except Cooper Kupp at the wide receiver position. I mean, that tells you the story right there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And man, Cooper Kupp, what a season. Maybe I'm kid to talk about him in a minute.
Maybe he will. Thank you for that segue. Kid, go ahead and talk about the Rams.
Yeah, it's Cooper Kupp. You know, obviously from a fantasy perspective, it's him. I guess you could argue from a real world perspective, like Stafford has been everything build and more within this offense, which is where I originally leaned. But then, yeah, to Rob's point, like no one's overperformed expectations more in the entire fantasy player roster. He's on pace for 20 touchdowns, 1,800 yards, 120 catches. Like, and it, you know, it hasn't even been like fluky based on like a Tyler Lockett type, you know, cadence. It's just been, I think I played against him last week and he went for like 11 for 95 or 105. And I was like, oh, awesome. I avoided the big Cooper Kupp game. So like, that's the indication that like, he's obviously just the surefire stud guy you want. He's not old and he'll be paired with Stafford for a while. So
I'll tell you, that Ram offense is just, it's a, just a feel good story all around. I mean, awesome for Henderson because it felt like they completely left him for dead when they went out and got Cam Akers to functionally replace him. I mean, great for fun to say Cooper Kupp because like he was left for dead on a lot of dynasty rosters and people were kind of liquidating him on the relative cheap as just a guy who was going to get his targets and catches, but not really score you a whole lot. And then, boy, Matt Stafford just has to be a kid in a candy store with all these weapons. I mean, Bobby Trees is still producing and he's a wide receiver too on an offense. That's pretty awesome for them. So good all around. It's a feel-good story, and boy, they must just be allergic to draft picks because they're down a few more in the Von Miller deal. But overall, I love that trade for them too. So go Rams, go. Rob, the Cardinals.
The easy answer is Kyler Murray.
But the real answer.
My actual answer is former Pittsburgh Steeler, James Conner. Mm-hmm. I looked at the numbers as I was pulling this up here, and holy crap, in standard leagues, which, I mean, who plays in standard leagues, really? But running back 6
and it's impossible to argue against him
in PPR. He's absolutely feasted. I thought this would be, you know, a 1A, 1B situation, and I thought he would be the 1A. It's really been hard to choose between him and Chase Edmonds, and then he absolutely went off last week with Chase Edmonds rolling his ankle on the very first play of the game. Plug and play him in your lineup for the next couple weeks while Chase Edmonds recovers. Enjoy it while it lasts, and then enjoy the running back too that you get to plug in that you got dirt cheap and probably double digit rounds in your draft. I know I took him in a redraft as my running back 5. Mm-hmm. And I'm loving it right now.
Very much a hater. Like, you know, he had 5 receptions coming into last week. He kept scoring. Like, Kyler should be more the goal line guy, even though they not should be, but has been, even though they kept getting the ball there. So I was like, you know, fluky, fine, maybe a startable guy, but like not someone I want to rely on. He doubled his reception total in the game without Edmonds there. They didn't say, you know, Benjamin, you're Edmonds now. They said, okay, we trust Connor's passing ability. We just didn't want to use him that way before. If that keeps up, he's a top 12 running back as long as Edmonds is gone, you know?
And I think they want to use Kyler a little less around the goal line.
They prefer to. Absolutely. You're right, yeah.
And that's huge point for Connor. And same, Connor having a limited workload. He's not meant to be a workhorse like he was in Pittsburgh. I think he can stay healthy with the, you know, 50-50, 60-40 timeshare.
100%.
Gobble up, you know, goal line touchdowns and good chunk plays.
The numbers on him in Pittsburgh said that he could be a very effective goal line and short yardage back. He is. The numbers suggested that, yeah, he can catch the ball effectively. He can. It's just not the role because Edmonds is faster. He just is.
Yeah.
And Connor as a 12-ish, maybe 15-ish touch guy a game is right in his wheelhouse. He can maintain that strength. He doesn't get worn down, which was always the problem when the Steelers tried to make him the bell cow. He just wasn't. And yeah, now he is thriving in the role.
As a fantasy owner, I like the idea of Edmonds being out and him having a couple 22-touch games.
Well, you may like that for now.
Short term, yeah.
Because we would see that in Pittsburgh, too, where he'd go off, and then next week, the leg would fall off.
Right, right.
So not wrong. Let's just hope good health and good thoughts for him and the Cardinals, and that Edmonds makes a speedy return and then does better than the 0.3 of a point he got me last week. So there we are, our tour around the NFC, the coveted Rod Pod Award for Fantasy MVP per team. Now let's do the special awards. The Rookie Award for the NFC holds an interesting thing in that we have no quarterbacks on the pile here. An assortment of players in which we have Kyle Pitts, Devonta Smith, and Elijah Mitchell. All provide interesting things, some of them high picks in Pitts, and some of them last round, seventh rounders in Elijah Mitchell. Rob, who are you giving your rookie award to?
It's got to be Elijah Mitchell. Liked his tape coming out of college, thought he was a sleeper. unfortunately, really also like the other running back that got drafted by San Francisco. But Elijah Mitchell has absolutely outproduced him, draft capital aside. Free in redrafts, third, fourth round pick and rookie picks this year, and you've got a running back two on your hands in a Shanahan system, gotta feel absolutely thrilled with yourself.
I spent $70 in fab to get Mitchell, and I haven't felt bad about it once. It's just one of those deals where the young man has come in, taken an opportunity, and just absolutely rolled with it. And it certainly seems like, I don't know, everybody thought Sermon was going to be the dude there, except for the Niners. They're like, yeah, slow your roll, because we're just not going to give him the ball. It's all Mitchell all the time there. Devonta Smith has flashed a little bit, but in terms of the top end, at least offensive talent that's so fantasy relevant, just hasn't happened. And Pitts, the sky's the limit, and it's going to be for a guy drafted that high and that talented. We'll just see what happens. But Mitchell has been the more consistent performer. The most surprising award for this year, the nominees are Cooper Kupp, the number three producer in most formats and wide receiver one by a wide mile. The Cordarrelle Patterson, number 31 overall, number five running back, and number seven wide receiver, depending on your formats. And Debo, number 15 overall producer in Superflex leagues. And wide receiver four. Robbie, who do you got?
Man, this is the toughest question of the night right here. You can talk the redemption stories of Patterson and Debo. But I think I'll take Cooper Kupp here. I've always thought he was a good wide receiver. I tried to buy him on a bit of a discount this offseason. When the talk was it's going to be Robert Woods, it's not going to be Kupp. But man, he's averaging like six more fantasy points a game than the next wide receiver. He's a cheat code, and he's so far beyond the next guy that I feel like it'd be a disservice to not put him in the most surprising here, because that is a massive gap in scoring.
Kit?
I think surprising, you got to say Patterson. Like, I'm not saying – I think we're talking something slightly different than MVP, right? And so like – some people could have predicted that Cooper Kupp was going to have an amazing season with Stafford, right? I mean, maybe as this good? No. And a lot of people thought that Debo was talented enough to be good, maybe not this good. No one thought Cordarrelle Patterson was going to be startable and relevant, right? And then he's beyond startable and relevant. So that's my pick.
Kit, I'm totally with you. The shock of the NFL year and the feel-good story of the NFL year is Cordarrelle Patterson's resurgence. That's not right. His relevance, because he never was before.
Yeah. So
there it is. The most surprising. Now, the most disappointing. Oh, the things that could have been. Antonio Gibson drafted so high by so many with the expectation that the WFT was going to give him the rock and not look back, playing dynamite defense behind it. Didn't so happen. Now he's number 108 overall and running back 23 in most formats, depending on how scoring works. Dalvin Cook consensus top 7 draft pick, now the number 116 overall and RB27. And then Allen Robinson, number 145 overall and wide receiver 53. Kit, who is your largest disappointment? Now, I will put a disclaimer on this beforehand. Being left out of the disappointments, we left guys who were injured and focused on the underperforming because it's not their fault. They had a boo-boo.
Yeah, I would say Allen Robinson for sure. Like, I don't think of Cook as necessarily a disappointment. I mean, the last 2 weeks haven't been great, but they've got a lot of usage. And before that, he was playing. He just missed some games. Gibson has been disappointing, right? But he's just kind of chugging along as a lower player that's startable than we expected. Allen Robinson, I mean, I was so high on him. In redraft specifically, I was like, oh, you know, Dalton will target him like crazy. And then when Dalton goes down, it'll be a good safety valve for Fields. He's overcome what seemed like much worse quarterback situations in the past, and he's droppable in redraft leagues and barely startable in all but the deepest situations. So he's the one who's like baffled me the most and disappointed me.
Robbie.
I think it's got to be Allen Robinson. To change it up a little bit, I'll pick Antonio Gibson. I was beating the drum for him. I thought he was going to have a larger role this year, and he struggled with minor injuries and just not being used as his best skill set. He was basically a wide receiver in college, and yet J.D. McKissic just gobbles up targets in that offense. Why Antonio Gibson's used purely as a runner, and it doesn't make sense to me. And I mean, that's the biggest frustration. I can understand why Allen Robinson hasn't produced when you look at the quarterback play. I can understand why Dalvin Cook's down there. He's due for some positive touchdown regression. And then everything's there for Antonio Gibson, yet he doesn't produce. And it's mostly on the coaching staff, it feels like, when they had someone similar in Christian McCaffrey, which is so frustrating.
It's an odd situation all the way around. All three of these guys are just kind of a combo victim of circumstance. Although the thing that surprises me most, Allen Robinson has never had great quarterback play. Some might argue he's never had really good quarterback play. He's just, you know, and as a Pennsylvania guy and a Penn State fan, it pains me to say it, but he just hasn't been living up to the billing. And maybe this is how he gets out of Chicago. Maybe this is where we finally get to see him have an opportunity with a high-end quarterback. The irony of the situation is, though, that maybe Fields is that guy, and he just needs to give it another year. We'll see. On to our next award, the first edition of the Denny Green Award for They Are Who We Thought They Were. This award is presented to the fantasy player that did everything we expected of them and has lived up to the lofty goals. The nominees for the Denny Green are Kyler Murray. The hype train was strongly behind him, and he has lived up all the way up to this ankle injury. Nominee two, Davante Adams. So good. Always so good. And right there yet again. And the ageless wonder, Tom Brady. We knew he'd be good. We knew he'd be real good. Some people, someone on the pod, actually projected him to be the best quarterback. Not me. I'm not that smart. So here it is. The nominees for the Denny Green Award. Kit, you go first.
I guess I would say, despite what other people on the pod said, that Brady like kind of doesn't belong on this list because I expected him to be a QB1, but the QB1 is pretty nuts to me. And like, that's not what I thought he was. You know, I thought he was going to be at last season where he was 6 or 8 and did better than people expected, but not by that much. I guess I want to say Adams because Adams like exemplifies the award the most, where like he has faced a lack of Aaron Rodgers in a game, missing a game, you know, whatever. But when he's out there, he's doing the most with the opportunities and he's getting a lot with the opportunities and he looks fucking awesome. So like, I don't know. He'd be the guy that I would put in there as for the spirit of the award.
Way to take the slapshot approach and try to capture the spirit of the thing. I truly appreciate you internalizing that. Robbie, go ahead. Big flex. Here we go.
Oh, man. Tom Brady's exactly who I thought he was. And, he's on pace to throw over 50 touchdowns, even with a few relatively down week by Tom Brady standards, he's got a game with zero touchdowns against his old team, New England. He didn't have a good game against the Saints a few weeks ago. Or no, I think he had a great game against the Saints. What am I thinking? They just lost that game. But man, he is still on pace to absolutely smash it. The only way he was going to be in this race is if he absolutely led the NFL in touchdowns. And why would you ever doubt Tom Brady to do that? He's going to do it. He's going to be there. And he's exactly who I thought he was. And it will pain me if he wins another ring. Please don't win another ring. Someone beat him.
All right. The last category I'm going to take for myself. I'm going to use the host privilege here and declare the NFC MVP. And it has to be Tom Brady, as dirty as that makes me feel. I don't know if he's just like drinking unicorn tears or whatever it is. He's just an unbelievable player, and he's on an even higher plane, even for himself. If he pulls off this deal of being the number one fantasy asset at his age, man, that's just, we'll never see it again until he does it next year. So unbelievable. Kudos to him. I hope he enjoys his Rod Pod NFC MVP. All right, on to the week's Survivor Showcase here. If you are one of those folks who hasn't gotten sniped by the Jets, or this week, the Jaguars jumping Buffalo. Brendan's still recovering, by the way. He will return soon, but it's just a sad, sad story. How do the Jags beat anybody, especially without their one viable fantasy player, without the running back? I don't get it, but they did it. Go figure. So let's have a look here. The game I'm going to give you, Ravens at Dolphins. Lamar Jackson is too much for Miami in every circumstance. The Ravens are getting 7.5, and it's probably just 7.5 too few. That's going to be, I would say, definitely I take the over on that deal. Rob, who you got?
I've got Indianapolis hosting Jacksonville. I don't think Jacksonville is going to spoil your season 2 weeks in a row, but crazier things have happened. I don't think Urban Meyer woke up and became a good coach. Last week was very much a fluke game. Buffalo has no running game. Jacksonville completely shut down the pass and made Josh Allen look ordinary. Well, in comes Indy with Jonathan Taylor, who is destroying people out there. He might be the best running back in the league who's healthy currently. I'd have to say Derrick Henry, but Derrick Henry ain't healthy right now. Carson Wentz has been on a tear of recent. Michael Pittman's breaking out. There are too many weapons for Jacksonville to slow down. And I expect a monster performance out of Wentz and Taylor in a very efficient game like they had on Thursday night last week.
Goes to show you that any team, that when they become totally one-dimensional, is beatable by any competent NFL defense, even if it happens to be Jacksonville's. Apparently, Zach Moss exited that game with a concussion, may not play this week, and Singletary is just not good. So seem to remember saying that a lot of times, but evidently people haven't listened. Kit, who you got?
I was going to say Ravens over Dolphins, but you took that, so I don't want to do that. I would use the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers are a great team, I think they have a good amount of tough matchups down the stretch. So if you haven't used them, they're almost definitely going to beat the Lions. I don't foresee an easier win on their schedule necessarily than the Lions. I would just go with the Steelers and hope that some crazy shit doesn't happen.
Dude, I hope they don't Steeler it up, but I have to.
Yeah, they could. They could, but
at home, one would presume it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell's coached the hell out of the Lions, man.
He truly has.
Them in games.
Yeah.
It scares me picking against the Lions.
Dude, for that guy to keep a winless team going, good on him. They'd run through a wall for him. They seem to absolutely love him. It's that week in the NFL where all the good teams are playing all the bad teams. So there's a load of viable survivor options. On to the college game, where there's going to be some interesting things to watch. In a battle of top quarterbacks, UNC travels to number 21, Pittsburgh. You could see Sam Howell, who's fresh off a hanging 40-something on a very good Wake Forest team, actually. Surprises me to say that. Travel to Pittsburgh to see Kenny Pickett, what might be the number one quarterback prospect. Battle of top quarterback prospects again 2 weeks in a row. High quality watching opportunity for our Devi folks. Rob, any games stand out?
I'll be watching the Oklahoma-Baylor game. My wife is a Baylor alumni. I am a huge Dave Aranda fan. I'm excited to see Baylor attempt to slow Oklahoma down. It's been a great game the last couple seasons. And, man, I am. I hope for an upset here because I really want to see Cincinnati get into the college playoffs. So I'm rooting against every high-ranked team right now until that happens. Come on, we need to see Cincinnati. I don't think they're going to do much, but man, they deserve to be there.
Look, you got to win with some kind of fashion, and they're not. They are taking it. They're handling their business. They deserve that, but they're squeaking by, and now they're getting passed by the one-loss power conference teams. Because here come old friends Ohio State into the top four, and a one-loss Bama team up there again. It's like, again, really? That needs to go to eight teams in the worst possible way. And no stupid, like, bye week system. Eight teams, 1v8, down the line, reseat, roll. No goofy buys, no goofy shenanigans. I've seen possible scenarios where it's like the top two get a pass, and then it's 3v8, and oh, good for you. You're the eight seed. You get in, and you pull the miracle. You beat number three. What's your prize? Alabama.
Oh, that's rough.
Lucky you.
So, hey, gotta pay your dues, man. I got no problem with that. And I think it'd probably be better if the top teams got a bye. They earned it, but
shenanigans.
I think the
you win out.
System's broken. I don't know what they're doing over there, but Alabama, well, at number two, barely beating LSU.
I'll give you another one. The season record, Purdue, goes into Ohio State. That would be high drama if the Boilermakers could just absolutely cook Ohio's chances.
Oh, wait,
OSU doesn't make it.
They already beat Iowa and Michigan State, right?
They took down Iowa and they took down Sparty.
Yeah. They're a fun team. Yeah.
They are. They've got some players. David Bell is a monster. He'll go high in draft this year. A lot of Devi leagues, he's already been snapped up because he kind of flashed as a freshman and was a real high recruit. So he's been snapped up in a lot of leagues. But he's definitely a name for next year to really consider. And we'll be talking quite a bit about him when we get to the offseason and start looking forward. One last one, Texas A&M at Ole Miss. Should be entertainment. And if you like passing offense, NC State at Wake should be a good one too. All right, time for tags. Robbie?
You can find me on Twitter and on Reddit at TheRotoRob. Another Tom Brady fact. Man, he is on pace for, just a massive amount of passing yards this year. 5,600 and 27 yards. The touchdowns might come up in the second half. Jesus, I mean, this could be a record-setting year.
He has to go back through his own division again, which is good for him.
Yeah. And to shut up about Tom Brady, now that Michigan State's season is over, Mel Tucker, come down to the Bayou State. We want you at LSU. I don't care what the links are with Jimbo Fisher. I don't want Jimbo. Come here, Mel Tucker. We want you back. We want you back. You're a part of the championship in 05, and come rejoin the team.
Get.
You can find me at Twitter at KitV_DynastyFF. You could find me on Reddit at KitKit123. Last piece of advice. I don't know. Don't got much for tonight. Sorry, guys.
Strong words, Kit. Way to close it out. Good job. Guys, as always, please go over to RiderDynasty.com. Check it out. We've put out some very interesting articles in the past week. Always remember to check out the Sister Pod. The Next Man Up podcast has real medical professionals explaining the injuries to you. They do such a better job than he has a bad thing in his shoulder and it's a problem. That there you go. There's my sage medical advice for you. It's bad. They'll do so much better than it's bad. Kyle and the guys do a fabulous job, so please check them out. They're a great listen. As far as things go, guys, it's time to start looking towards next year a little bit. Even if you are on the championship trail, it's important to know what's coming. So start to pay attention to the early draft stuff. Try and start to get some names on your radar, because the early research matters. You'll know the guys coming into the draft process, and you'll know whether it's time to either liquidate those draft picks for better assets because you're not so impressed with the 2022 class, or it's time to know that the names you need to know and get out in front of whether you need a jockey for draft position and whether it's important to try and trade up to get as high as you can for that player that you just got to have. Your teams are yours. Make them yours. All right, guys. Riders, have a great week. Enjoy the game.